Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear podcast. I'm your host, Jesse, and I'd like to welcome you to the show. I hope everybody's doing good out there. We're getting so close to football season. You can just feel it. You got the kind of the fall weather coming in. It's been a little cool here the last few mornings. We are single digits, Peter Wark, if you'd like to say, days away from football season. Only 9 days at the time of recording this episode. So I'm pretty excited. I know you guys are excited, too. Even if it is Duquesne, hey, I mean, it's back in Doak Campbell. It's Florida State football, and I'm just ready to get it started. I know that LSU game is lurking right around the corner. I'm already geared up for that New Orleans trip. I cannot wait for that one. First, I do want to apologize for taking so long to get this episode put out. I know it's been a while since I put out a new episode of the podcast. I'm not sure if you guys have seen it yet. If you follow us on social media, or if you've been on the website, you probably have seen recently the preseason digital magazine that I was able to put out. And if you guys haven't checked it out, I mean, you got to go take a look at this. It's over 40 pages. I think it came in 47 pages total of just FSU content as it relates to the 2022 season. Some advanced stats, some insights, some analysis, a schedule breakdown. Just got a lot of things in there that I think you guys will really enjoy. Again, you can find it on our website. You can either download it there or you can read it right there on the website. There's a page just for where you can read it at. So I do appreciate you guys checking that out. I know you're going to love it. So that's kind of where all of our energy and focus has been for the last little bit, just trying to get that thing put together because it was a ton of work and it took a lot of time. But I really think it came out well. So with that being said, all of the stuff that we're going to cover is pretty much in the magazine. So what I want to do is do an offensive preview, then we're going to do a defensive preview, then I'll do a full schedule breakdown and a win-loss prediction and try to get all this done before the Duquesne game. So we're just going to kind of roll all the position previews that I did in the magazine into one show for the sake of convenience for everybody. Which is the format I want to follow is hopefully, you know, we'll talk about a little bit of the offense from last year, how it can translate to this year. We'll go through the position groups, impact players I think are going to make a difference this year, kind of a little bit of the position outlook and how I think they'll perform, and just some of the things we can look forward to from each different position group. Will they be better this year versus last year? And just kind of wrap it all up into one encompassing picture at the end, and then we'll get out of here. So with that being said, we'll get into it. The first thing I want to talk about really is kind of the offense as a whole, just the whole picture. And one thing that I want to discuss is how Mike Norvell's offense has been productive in the past. You know, maybe it's not like the most prolific offense in college football, but it has been productive. He has put up a lot of yards and a lot of points in his time as an offensive coordinator and head coach. Since he's been at Florida State, some of the numbers have matched, but a lot of them have not. They've just fallen real short on production. And to me, when you look at over his career, when you're looking at a sample size of 8 full seasons compared to, I mean, really, I guess 1.5. I mean, you had COVID, but that was just a train wreck of a season. So anyway, just looking at the sample size, there's obviously something that's causing them not to be able to produce like he has in over the course of his career. And I tend to kind of err on the side of believing 8 years worth of data versus 1 in a COVID year. So obviously his success at Group of Five doesn't always translate over to the Power Five, which a lot of his offensive time and the success that I'm looking at was at Arizona State as well, which is Power Five, of course. But one of the things that I just want to point out is just looking at the statistics from last year. So Florida State was 27.6 points per game scoring offense, which was 74th in the country, which, okay, so that's not, they have a lot of room to improve on offense. Rushing was 52nd in the country at 177.8 yards per game, which is, that is also below his career average per game. Passing was 201.6 yards per game, 94th. Obviously, we all know, you watch the games, passing offense was not great. And that is far below his career averages of, I mean, maybe not far below, but it's a pretty good ways below what his season average has been. Total offense, 379.4 yards per game, came in 80th. Explosive play rate was 13.7%, which was 27th. That's the thing about this offense. It was a bit of a boom or bust. With Jordan Travis's ability, With the running game, they could just break one. And that's really what we saw. It wasn't necessarily the most consistent offense, but it could break a few plays here or there just because you have some playmakers, namely Jordan Travis. It's just we have the offensive line struggles and the lack of a receiver threat really kind of made them an inconsistent offense. So third down conversion rate was terrible. They have to get a lot better at third downs this year. They were 35.6%, which was 110th in the country. Pressure rate allowed up front, 31.4%, 86th in the country. Sacks allowed was 36, 114th in the country. So, I mean, we all feel better about the offensive line, and we all think they're going to take a step forward this year. But statistically, it wasn't that great last year. And so I think when you're trying to paint the whole picture, when you have an offensive line that does struggle, especially in pass blocking, they're pretty good at run blocking. But when they struggle to pass block and you also have a receiver group who doesn't really pose a threat to other defenses to the point where they can play you man or they can load up the box, you know, things like that because they're not scared of your passing threat, it makes it hard. I mean, it does. And so that's why I think some of the additions this offseason is really going to make a huge difference for this offense this year. I'm not saying it's going to necessarily be the number one scoring offense in the country, but I can imagine it's going to be a lot better than what we saw last year. Continuing down the line, efficiency, they were 90th in the country. Yards per play average, they were 72nd in the country. They were 27th at finishing drives and 15th in the red zone. And so they had a hard time a lot of times getting to the red zone, but when they got there, they were very efficient. I want to say there's something like 32 consecutive scoring drives, which actually leads the country coming into 2022. So once they get down there, they're pretty good at scoring. And I feel like that's probably even going to get better this year when you add a guy like Johnny Wilson, who is a huge threat, a big target going into the end zone. So as you can see, looking at last year's stats, I just wanted to kind of look back at those real quick just to kind of understand where we came from and where we're trying to get. And the fact that Florida State's offense, it was not great last year. It has a long way to go. And so now that we look at last year's stats, the thing that I wanted to point out earlier, talking about Norvell's past offenses, so let's go over some of the numbers pre-Florida State. Again, this only counts his time before Florida State as the sole offensive coordinator or higher, basically Arizona State and Memphis. It's 8 seasons. So his quarterbacks have averaged 292 completions on 466 attempts. Last year, Florida State had only 340 pass attempts. So obviously, they're just falling short on their passing game. And Norvell would probably typically want to pass more, but of course, he's playing to the strength of his running game. They threw for 3,804 yards average over 8 seasons, 32 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Florida State they're not close to that. Average yards per game is 285. We're talking about 80 yards more than what Florida State had last year, and that's per game. Rushing stats, they averaged 2,629 yards rushing per season with an average of 30 touchdowns. Average per game was 196 yards. Now, Florida State in 2020, they did average 199 yards, and they are right on point with that. But again, keep in mind during the COVID season, they also didn't play the Clemson defense. They didn't play Florida defense that year. So they did miss out on some of those tougher defenses that they had to play that may have skewed the numbers more. Which, when you look at Alex Atkins being the offensive coordinator now, you would expect them to probably run the ball more and lean more on the offensive line strengths, which is something I like. And during his season at Charlotte, where he was the offensive coordinator, they led the conference in rushing in their conference, and they averaged over, I think it was right around 203, 205 yards a game. So still, you can see with an offensive coordinator who managed to get 200 yards a game, and Norvell's offense averaged about 200 yards a game, and last year they were at about 178. So when you look at the passing deficiency and the rushing deficiency in yardage, you're talking about around 100 yards a game. And that really could make a difference when you look at some of the games that Florida State had last year that were pretty close that could have went one way or the other, given they had 100 more, if they would have added 100 more yards of offense. And really the point of all this is just saying that I don't believe Mike Norvell just forgot how to call an offense when he got in Tallahassee. I think that when you look at he inherits a team where you have transfers come in and they're automatically the best players on the team. They're the players that get the season accolades. You have non-Power 5 starters coming in from Northern Illinois and Lamar and whatnot that are projected to be day one starters. That kind of gives you a hint of what he had to work with. And when you look at some of the production numbers, that's kind of what we've seen, is having that kind of just lack of talent to work with. Granted, he didn't have probably the greatest talent at the other stops too, but you know, the ACC is probably a little tougher conference as far as that's concerned. So 5 out of 8 years, he had a 1,000-yard rusher. He had 7 out of 8 years, he had a 1,000-yard receiver. Still hasn't had either one of those at Florida State yet. And I figured, you know, some people would probably think, oh, well, you know, speaking of weaker conferences, he probably didn't face that many good defenses, right? So I did a lot of homework when I wanted to bring this up. So over his career, Norvell has faced 12 top 25 defenses. He outscored their season averages 11 out of 12 times. He's faced top 50 defenses 32 times, and he's outscored their average season average points 24 out of 32 times. So he's been pretty good against good defenses as well. Only 2 out of 8 seasons did they have less than 30 passing touchdowns. None with less than 28 ever. He's never had a season with less than 3,000 passing yards. Only one season without a 1,000-yard receiver. Never had a season with less than 2,000 rushing yards. Only one season with less than 20 rushing touchdowns. And so when you just look at these things, where he's performed very well in the past on his offense, or with his offense, should I say, and then you look at the 2021 Florida State, so the passing stats are 209 completions on 340 attempts, 2,400 yards passing. So you're already right there. You're 500, almost 600 yards below the season average. I even went one step further, and because most of those seasons they made a bowl game, I used the season averages and carried them forward just in case Florida State played a bowl game, just to be thorough. And so even if they had had an extra game with their current season average, they still would be 2,600 yards. So they're still 400 yards short. And that's just short of the 3,000, which is the minimum passing yards. We said, you know, his career average is 3,800 yards. So even at that point, Florida State would still be 1,200 yards shy of what Norvell's typical passing offense gets. They only had 20 touchdowns. If you factor in the extra game, it would have been 22 touchdowns through the air. So they're still 8 touchdowns behind. And, I mean, you get the point of what I'm trying to make here, is they're still very far behind. And so one other thing that I really wanted to do was I looked at what Norvell's career averages would have been had he have been in the ACC. And I know this is kind of apples to oranges because you're in a different conference with different defenses. But nonetheless, for comparison's sake, so his career average versus the ACC in passing offense would have finished second last season. His 2019 Memphis team would have also finished second. Completion percentage, his career average would have been fourth. Memphis 2019 would have been fourth. The yards per game would have been tied for third. His 2019 Memphis team would have been first. Passing touchdowns, his career average and 2019 Memphis team would have finished third. Passing efficiency rating, he would have been fourth, and his 2019 Memphis team would have been second. Rushing stats would have both been fourth. Rushing touchdowns would have both been second. Average yards per game would have been both fourth. And so total touchdowns and total yards would have been second. And so in the ACC. So the point I'm trying to make is, if Norvell can get to where he can run his offense to the standard that he has in the past, this offense can be top two, top three in the ACC, which is far from what we have seen. And so, because when you look at FSU last season in passing yards, they were 10th. Completion percentage, they were 7th. Yards per game, they were 9th. Passing touchdowns, they were 8th. Passing efficiency, they were 8th. Rushing, they were 8th. Yards, touchdowns, they were 8th. Average yards per game, they were 6th. And so you just see that the point I'm trying to make is, once they get the pieces to run the offense, even say he never got better than his career averages, but he just averaged, or he got equal to what he normally gets out of an offense, you still have a top three offense, and we have definitely not seen that so far. So that's why I feel like with the added pieces, with the extra year of install, with the extra year of strength and conditioning, I feel like there is a possibility that this offense can be better than people give it credit for. Are the pieces there ones that can do that? I'm not sure because we're vying on a lot of potential here, but at the same time, I think that the level of talent and the culture and the buy-in have completely flipped since he got here, and I think that that's really just gonna pay dividends this year when you look at the overall picture. And so first up, speaking of potential and ways that things can improve, we'll get into the quarterback position. So obviously this year is going to be the year of Jordan Travis. It'll be his first year where he's the sole guy. He's QB1, doesn't have to split reps with anybody, which I think is good. Now, obviously, there were some times where he had to split reps because he was injured, he wasn't healthy, and he wasn't on the field. And that could still be the case this year, knock on wood. Hopefully that's not it. But when you look at him having a full year now, he's had more experience, which I feel good about him coming in this year because a lot of people just still aren't sold on him yet. But he's actually, I feel like he's underrated as a passer, and that's one of the points that I'm going to try to make during the position preview. We already know about his legs. He is a dynamic athlete. He has gifts running the ball that not a lot of quarterbacks in the league have, which is something that you have to take advantage of. You have to use those legs while also trying not to put him in a position where he's going to be out, because without Jordan Travis, last year anyway, the offense fell flat on its face almost immediately. The thing about Jordan is now he actually has a lot more experience than he did before. Game experience, he's more comfortable in the offense. It's now he's had a full year of install with Norvell, and he doesn't have to worry about, am I going to be pulled at any minute? Do I need to force this to try, you know, and beat out another quarterback? He gets to be the guy. He gets to be his team. So I think that he has the chance to really go into the season knowing that he just has to remain calm and be the guy that this team needs, try and stay healthy, protect himself, and just manage the game as best he can, and don't worry about who's looking over his shoulder or who might get, you know, if his helmet comes off all of a sudden, he misses the game and a half, and which was something we saw last year, and it was a mistake. And so I think Jordan has the potential. I think he's underrated as a passer. We'll look at some of his statistics real quick. So last year, passing stats for Jordan, he went 122 of 194 with a 62.9% completion rate or percentage, 1,539 yards on the year. I mean, his completion percentage was pretty good. Yards were kind of lacking. Obviously, his stat sheet will tell you he played in 10 games. I really only count 9 because I think he played like 3 snaps or something like that in Jacksonville State, or made like 1 or 2 pass attempts. It's ridiculous, and I don't count that against him. So the yards just weren't a whole lot there, but he didn't play a full season either. You have 15 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. It's not bad. You'll see in a minute where it's kind of on par percentage-wise with some of the things that I'm going to talk about, but, you know, it's not bad. It could be a little bit better, obviously. He had 134 rushing attempts for 530 yards and 7 touchdowns. So like we said, he has that dual-threat dynamic ability, which defenses do have to account for. His PFF grade, how much stock you put into that, I don't know. It was 85.2. His passing grade was 82.3, which was, I mean, it's pretty good. You know, that's good. 60 is like you walk on the field, base level, goes up and down from there. His adjusted completion percentage, which counts for like throwaways and things like that, batted balls, was 71.8, which is good. You know, that's a good complete. He's a pretty efficient quarterback. His big time throw rate was 5.2%, which was tied for 23rd highest in the country. Turnover-worthy play rate was 2.1%, which was tied for 9th. So, he's efficient. He's careful with the ball. He takes care of the ball pretty well. Uncatchable pass rate was 27.9%, which was 42. So, he's got to get a little better with that. And I think a lot of that comes on his deep ball, which we'll talk about here in just a minute. Average depth of target was 10 yards. His pressured rate, which is obviously the amount of dropbacks that he was pressured on, was 39.9%, which was pretty high. It was one of the higher ones in the conference. And his NFL passer rating was 100.1 overall. When you look at his downfield passing chart, which is something I included in a position preview on our website, when we're talking about his deep ball, that's the area he needs to improve the most. He had a 37.1% completion percentage. He did have 495 yards, 4 touchdowns, and 4 interceptions. But when you look at his short range and his mid-range passing, which is basically 0 to 9 for the short, 10 to 19 for the mid-range. His short passing, he had a 70.7% completion percentage, 408 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 1 interception. As for his mid-range passing, he had a 67.5% completion percentage, 459 yards, 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. So those stats alone tell you, and he was actually really good when you look at even a further breakdown of his passing over the middle of the field. And when you add a guy in like Michael Pittman, who can work the entire field as a receiver, who I like to be able to do that, that further adds to them those production numbers. And that's why, you know, again, I think you just look at some of the numbers for Travis, really anywhere from 0 to 20 yards. I mean, you don't get a whole lot better than, you know, basically a 70% completion percentage and a 7 touchdown to 1 interception ratio anyway. Obviously, you need more yards and more touchdowns out of it. But your percentage-wise, I mean, that's about pretty good as you can ask for. And with Jordan, the thing is you have a smaller sample set. But so what I did, if you checked out the magazine or anything in the quarterback preview, I went through and did some comparison percentage-wise because, again, Jordan has a smaller sample set than the other quarterbacks I had to compare him to, obviously because he was splitting reps, he wasn't the full-time starter, and he had some injury time that he missed. But when you look at some percentages to kind of smooth the data out, I mean, realistically, Jordan Travis is on par with some of the better quarterbacks in the conference. And so what I did was I compared him to Tyler Van Dyke and Sam Hartman, just because those are two of the better ones and they play both of those during the season. So as far as completion percentage goes, Jordan had the highest. His adjusted completion percentage was the highest. His big-time throw rate was the lowest, but not by a whole lot. You had 5.2% for Jordan, 7.1% for Tyler Van Dyke, and 6.1% for Sam Hartman. His turnover-worthy play rate was the lowest. Yards per attempt were in line with them. It was the lowest, but it was in line. Let's see. His PFF passing grade, it was higher than Tyler Van Dyke, lower than Sam Hartman, so he came in second there. NFL passing rating was second behind Van Dyke and above Sam Hartman. He was also the most pressured of the group, because what I also wanted to do was look at when he was kept clean stats and the pressured stats, because the thing is, when Jordan's kept clean and he's given time to make a throw, like I said before, he's a very efficient quarterback, especially in short to mid-range throws. So he was kept clean 60% of the time, which was by far the lowest of the group. Sam Hartman was kept clean 66.2% of the time. And what you think about it, he had, I think it was like something crazy, like 500 dropbacks. So that's a lot bigger sample set. And then Tyler Van Dyke was kept clean 77.8% of the time. When you look at completion percentage, adjusted completion percentage, PFF passer grade, Jordan's in front, again, all of them. And so now, when you look at the pressured stats, his pressured stats are not that great, but really neither are the other quarterbacks. He was the most pressured of the group. His completion percentage was second. His adjusted completion percentage was second. His yards per attempt were second. So, I mean, really out of all the categories I did, and it was a lot of categories, Jordan had 6 that he led, Van Dyke had 5, and Sam Hartman had 8. Now, obviously, I understand a lot of this is just comparing percentages, and there's nothing to guarantee that Jordan could maintain that level over the course of a season. But when you look at it, I mean, statistically-wise, percentage-wise, he's right on par. And, I mean, he had almost 200 pass attempts, so I think that's a pretty fair-sized sample to show his passing ability. Which is why one of the reasons I think Jordan can be a good quarterback, a better passer than people think, is when you compare him to the better passers in the conference, percentage-wise, his numbers match up or are better than a lot of them, and that's being the most pressured, and no offense, but arguably the worst passer, or, you know, the receiver group that they had. When you look at Wake Forest, they had a true freshman receiver, A.T. Perry, who had more receiving yards than 4 leading receivers for FSU combined. So, again, I know that has something to do with who's throwing them the ball also, but, I mean, we really didn't see anybody separate themselves last year as a true threat at wide receiver. So you take Jordan still putting up good numbers, and now you give him, hopefully, what we think is going to be better offensive line play up front, better receivers out wide from what we think, and another year of install. Tell me why he can't be a lot better passer and a lot better quarterback. Tell me why he can't, you know, put up more yards similar to what Norvell's typical offenses would. And that is why I also did, and I know this is another hypothetical kind of way to look at things. It's not, there's nothing guaranteed in the state. It's just a kind of a fun way I wanted to look at things. So I wanted to try and project what type of season Jordan Travis could have if they performed up to what Norvell normally did. I mean, his percentages seem to be already in line, so how would it look? So Norvell had another mobile quarterback back in 2013 at Arizona State. It was Taylor Kelly. And when I looked back at his stats from 2013, his second year under Norvell, which is where Jordan is now, he played in 14 games. He went 302 completions on 484 attempts for a 62.4% completion percentage. Jordan had a 62.9% completion percentage. He had 3,635 yards, which, you know, is pretty in line with what I told you Norvell's career averages were earlier. 7.5 yards per attempt. Jordan was at 7.9. 28 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, 15-6. So that's pretty close there too. Taylor Kelly had 173 rushing attempts for a little over 600 yards at 3.5 yards per attempt and 9 touchdowns. Jordan had 134 rushing attempts, 530 yards, 4 yards an attempt, 7 touchdowns in only 9 games. So really, like I said, if you project out a little bit, so let's say what would happen if Jordan Travis threw the ball 484 times like Taylor Kelly did. Now, will he ever throw the ball almost 500 times in a season? Maybe not. But if you add in more game, you know, at least 3 more games, hopefully, and then, you know, maybe a bowl game too, when you look at everything encompassing, and so you add 7.9 yards per attempt times an additional 290 attempts, he would have had 3,830 yards. I mean, almost directly in line with what Norvell normally gets out of his offense. 4.0 yards per carry times an additional 39 attempts would have been 686 yards. Almost, you know, what Taylor Kelly had. He averaged, Jordan Travis averaged 1.67 touchdowns per game. Passing times an additional 5 games, 23 touchdowns. It's a little short still, but pretty much in line. So I also did this in 2014 with Taylor Kelly again. The numbers were, they worked out, the math worked out almost identical. Taylor Kelly got hurt that year. They had to bring in Mike Bercovici. He was not necessarily a mobile quarterback, and he actually had a smaller sample size than Jordan, so I had to subtract numbers off of it, and still, they lined right up. I know this is hypothetical, and I know there's nothing guaranteeing that he can maintain these averages and produce those same results, but when you really sit down and look at it, if you stretched out his sample set over the size of a season, he's already in line with what Norvell's career averages on offense are. They just have to, he needs to produce that at a full season and not splitting reps with someone and staying healthy and being there. And if they can do that, you know, imagine looking at Taylor Kelly's 2013 season. Imagine it's January, we're getting ready for the bowl game, hopefully, or December, whenever. And you look back and Jordan Travis has 3,600 passing yards, over 600 rushing yards, over, you know, 35, almost 40 combined touchdowns. Tell me you wouldn't take that season, because I know I sure would. I would be thrilled with that, because I think Florida State would be an 8 or 9 win team with a season like that. And so when you look at he's on par to hit those numbers percentage-wise, he just needs a larger sample set. And now that they might have the pieces in place with the additions and with the attrition to produce those numbers, then I think that is my case why I think Jordan has the potential to have his best season yet. And if he does so, the offense can also have its best season yet and hopefully get back to meeting some of Mike Norvell's numbers. Again, you add an average of, you know, what we said earlier of 100 yards per game on offense. And, you know, that's going to make a big difference when you have a lot of, when you, or at least had a lot of close games like they did, which again, I mean, it's signs of progress. They got hammered a lot previously in like 2020. And so they were able to compete against tough teams like NC State. You know, I think Clemson might have been looked a little closer than it was, but they were, I mean, they were right there in it. And so when you see them kind of closing that gap, like Bobby Bowden said, you win small or you lose big, you lose small, then you lose small, or you win small, you win big. And so we're to the losing small point last year. And so now I'm ready to see the step that they can take next year. If for some reason Jordan is out, we'll just take a quick look at who's next. Obviously, you know it's going to be Tate Rodemaker. He really didn't perform well when he was thrown into action as a true freshman, but that really probably wasn't a fair situation to be tossed into, which is why I think it's positive that he has had time to develop. You know, he really didn't play hardly at all last year, but now you're looking at year three. He's got a better grasp of the offense. He played tough in a tough division in high school, so he's had, you know, he was a good quarterback in high school, and he played in a tough division. So it's not like the guy can't throw the ball. Obviously, we have to see him put it together under the lights. I mean, we don't need another J.J. Constantino situation where he comes in and he's trying to hand the ball off the wrong way. But I don't think we're going to see that anymore because you've heard a lot of the positive development through spring and it's carried over into fall. He's been able to deliver some nice balls. You know, Tate Rodemaker is probably the more prototypical quarterback in that Mike Norvell would use if they had a really good offensive line. And if they had solid offensive receivers at least, then that may be the type of guy that they were going to use, the tall, you know, big frame pocket passing type of quarterback. I mean, look at one of his most successful seasons, obviously, you know, success record-wise and yard-wise was 2019 Memphis, and he had Brady White at quarterback. I mean, who's Brady White? He's not Jameis Winston. He's not Jordan Travis, you know, I shouldn't say Jordan Travis because it's a different skill set. But you get what I'm saying. I mean, the guy wasn't anything. He's not in the NFL right now. So, you know, that's just – Norvell doesn't necessarily need that type of quarterback, that high-profile quarterback, to have success is what I'm trying to say. And so I think they don't have any problem winning with Jordan Travis. I don't think that the offense will fall off a cliff now with Tate Rodemaker. Now, obviously, I don't really want to find that out if – that were knotted up with Clemson or something like that, and then you have to inject Tate Rodemaker into the lineup. I don't want to find out in that situation, and hopefully he gets some burn against Duquesne so we can see what he looks like in an in-game situation again. And hopefully he does a lot better this time. But it is positive to have good things being said about him and that maybe offense won't fall off a cliff if Jordan were to miss time like it did last year. And even if you have something like a Sean McGuire-ish situation, I think that's perfect for them. That's at least what they need. Someone who can just steady the ship and just hold on, you know, and not lose you the game. And I think that's what you can expect out of Tate Rodemaker. Obviously, we still have to see it on the field. I'm not buying stock in it until we see that, and we just haven't yet. But I do like the positive developments. Of course, you got A.J. Duffy. I mean, he's had good and bad come out of camp from what people have said. I don't think at any point you want to have to rely on a true freshman. I think he is talented. I think he will be part of the future. And I think that's why people should calm down a little bit about quarterback recruiting. I know there's been a lot of misses lately. And, you know, at least Florida State is creeping up in the recruiting rankings now. I believe they're top 20. So everyone just kind of pump your brakes on that. Let things play out. But, you know, I don't want to have to rely on a true freshman in a pressure situation. So hopefully it doesn't come to that. And with that, we'll move to the running back position before this goes too long. Obviously, last year, Jayshon Corbin was your leading rusher. He was the workhorse. He had the most carries by far. He has departed. From what I understand, he's doing pretty well with the Giants. He's going to maybe get some playing time behind Saquon Barkley, so that's pretty cool to hear. But taking his place, it's going to probably be running back by committee this year. You obviously returned Trayshawn Ward and Lawrence Toafili as well. You know, Trayshawn, I think, may be the early season starter, if not Trey Benson, but you're going to see a lot of rotation at the position. They do return some production, which is nice. But Trayshawn, he's got a little something to him. You know, he's a good back. He ascended from the walk-on ranks, which is very impressive. When you look at, he obviously had a smaller sample set last year than the other backs, you know, as far as Jayshawn, because Jayshawn got more carries. But when you look at it percentage-wise of the running backs, because Jordan Travis had the best numbers rushing, but when you look at the running back position, Trayshawn Ward, percentage-wise, he had the highest yards per attempt at 6.6. He had the highest percentage of missed tackles forced. He had the highest percentage of 10-plus yard runs. He was also the highest graded running back for Florida State, according to Pro Football Focus, with a pretty impressive grade of 84.5. He had 20 receptions, and he also, maybe more impressively, had a pass blocking grade of 81, which was the highest of all the running backs. So I think he's a great utility back. You can get a lot of things out of him. He can catch it coming out of the backfield. He's got a little what for to him when he runs, and he can pass block. And, you know, he put up 546 yards on 83 carries last year. So if he gets a more expanded role this year, obviously he's still going to be splitting reps, that I think he can have a good season. Now, he may not be a feature back, so to say, and he's never had a full season of being RB1 and carrying the load. But, I mean, he can have a great season. And, I've, you know, obviously we know this team, especially with Atkins being coordinator now and a little better offensive line, they're probably going to be a run-heavy offense. So these guys, even splitting snaps, are going to get a lot of burn. And I think Trayshon's going to have a really good season. Last year was obviously his far best season that he's had since he's been at Florida State, and I expect him to build on that going forward. Looking at Toa Fili, you obviously know he's kind of that electric back. He can make things happen at the blink of an eye. You saw the amazing play that he had during the Clemson game where he bounced off the guy, kept going, tiptoed down the sideline. I mean, he is a really, really exciting back to watch. There's been a lot of inconsistent production at times. He's kind of a boom or bust type of guy. I do like having that home run threat in the lineup. I just think he may end up at the end of the day being more towards the third back in the rotation. But, you know, if he can get more consistent in his production and his play, I think he's could be a game changer. I mean, like I said, you watch his film and you see that he can just break one at any minute. And that's something that is really nice to have, because last year, I mean, Jayshon was great and he did break a few, but they really haven't had that Dalvin Cook, Cam Akers type of breakout feature back that can just change the game for you. And that's why I want to bring up next Trey Benson, who there's not a lot of stats to go off of. Obviously, he had the injury at Oregon. You know, he almost has basically no stats to even mention. But when you look at what he did in the spring game, when you hear the reports, when you look at his physical tools and the way he runs, I mean, he could be that guy. He could be a feature back by the season's end. A lot of people were doubting him at first because of the knee injury. Why would you take a running back that's coming off a season-ending knee injury? But I think he's going to prove a lot of people wrong. And just seeing the way that he's back and running, he's obviously 100%. He's obviously good to go. And he already said in a post-practice interview that his goal is to be the first 1,000-yard rusher since Cam Akers in 2019. And he thinks if he stays healthy that he can get there. And I do too. I mean, this is obviously going to be a run-heavy offense. You obviously are probably going to get a little better offensive line play. And he obviously, you know, from what we've seen, he has the tools to be a really good running back. The other thing is, though, it's still all potential. And until we see it on the field, you can't guarantee anything. So while I think he's going to have a great season, and I think by the end of the year he will be your RB1, so to speak, we still got to see it. And so potential's great. Spring film's great. Playing in practice and positive everything coming out of practice is good. But I still need to see it on Saturday under the lights. But he has a lot of potential. This whole room has a lot of potential. And I think while you don't really have a RB1 out of the group, I think you do have a well-rounded skill set. You have a workload back. You have a feature back or a potential feature back. And you have a home run hitter, which I really like. Kind of what you get combined when you melt the whole room together. And unfortunately, CJ Campbell, I thought he would be a contributor this year, but he had a season-ending knee injury, so we wish him well with his recovery. Freshman Rodney Hill, man, he already looks like he's legit, and I think we're going to see him contribute. It'll probably be in a small role, but they might have some packages drawn up for him. They did also move Joshua Burrell to running back, who, I mean, he's a bigger back, so he's a bigger guy, and I think he squatted like 600-plus pounds as a freshman. So if he wasn't going to break the receiver rotation, I think it's a good move, and I like it. And I think it's going to give them that larger power back that maybe they don't have right now. Making that transition, I don't know how soon you'll see him, how much you'll see him involved, but they could get some packages for him this season just to get him involved and to use that ability. Next up, we'll just touch on tight ends real quick. Unfortunately, there's really not a whole lot to talk about, despite there being a whole lot of guys on the roster. This is a position that's really been, it's been underwhelming since Nick O'Leary left, and you just haven't seen anyone that's wowed you. You haven't had any kind of dominant tight end. Obviously, you have Cam McDonald, who is your number one target passing-wise, but he's been reportedly in a boot for most of fall camp, so I'm not sure when he's going to be back and if he's going to be up to 100%. And even then, it's not been a wowing performance so far. Now, in fairness, I did go back and I looked at what Norvell normally gets out of his tight ends, and his leading tight end is normally between 200 to 400 yards per season, receiving anyway. And Cam had 243 yards last season in a passing offense that wasn't that great. So receiving-wise, I think he's right there in line with what you would expect to get from a tight end in Norvell's offense. So hopefully he can come back, and hopefully he can have a nice season. He had a good catch percentage at 72.7%. 24 receptions, 243 yards, 2 touchdowns in 2021. His drop rate was actually 0%, which was nice. So, you know, it's pretty sure-handed, but they're also going to need to get some more out of the blocking aspect of the position. His blocking grade was only 56.9, which was not very, I mean, that's below average. There have been some names coming out, like Marcus and Douglas, who has been a name you've heard mentioned multiple times as a guy who could potentially be an impact at tight end, make an impact anyway. He's a bigger tight end who could help out in the blocking side of things. You have two freshmen, Jarrell Powers and Brian Courtney, who the staff's really high on, and they say that Jarrell Powers may even contribute this year, but there's still some development to be had. Obviously, there's about 10 more tight ends on the roster, and you can pretty much pick whichever one you want to maybe break out, because last year, statistically speaking, if you remove Jordan Wilson, who was obviously here last year, and then you look past Cam, the next highest receiving yardage from a tight end was 13 yards. So you're basically getting nothing from an entire group of guys. Hopefully they can develop the tight end position a little more. It's just kind of been a lacking position, and I really don't think it's going to change too much this year. Hopefully you can get a solid 250-300-yard season from Cam and maybe get some blocking help from Marcus and Douglas, a larger tight end. I think that's probably about all you can expect. Then we'll move on to wide receivers. And this is, I think, where a lot of the excitement and also hesitation comes in for me. You do return a significant amount of your production from last year outside of basically Andrew Parchment, but it was kind of not that great production. They really didn't have any kind of threats at wide receiver. They didn't have anyone you had to account for. Ontario Wilson comes back, and he's a good receiver. He's getting better as time goes. He's had positive reports in the fall, and I hope he can take the next step this year. He led the team in receiving yards and touchdowns last season. He got more consistent as the season went on, but even then, he only had 382 yards receiving and 5 touchdowns. His catch rate was 62.2%. and he had one of the highest drop rates of the starting receivers. You want to see him build on the progress that he had towards the end of the season last year and carry that over, because I think he can be a significant contributor to this offense. Will he ever be like a 1,000-yard receiver? I don't know that I see it when he's only got a little over 1,000 yards so far, really with 3 full-time seasons. And so if he can take the next step, he can surely contribute. But I think that you got to look to maybe the other guys to be more dominant. But that doesn't mean he can't be a key contributor to this offense. That doesn't mean he can't put up 500-600 yards, which is still really good. Then you look at Malik McLean, who, man, he really flashed a lot of times last year. And he looks like what a Florida State receiver should look like. 6'4", 200 pounds. He can jump. He can go up and get the ball. But he was a freshman, and he had inconsistent freshman moments. His production was a little off. You know, obviously being a freshman in a not so great passing offense, he gets a little bit of a pass there, but he did have the lowest catch rate at 48.5% of the team last year. So hopefully in year two, you know, they say you normally take the biggest jump in a year two. If he can make that jump, then you're going to have a guy who can be a solid contributor for this team and could really, you know, maybe be a special guy with his size and his body control in the small spurts that we've seen, but we still have to see it, and we just have to see it on a more consistent basis. I mean, you still have other guys coming back, non-transfer guys, should I say, coming back, like Ja'Kai Douglas, who I think is one to really watch. Man, he kills that wheel route. I mean, he gets it and he is gone. He is an absolute burner. They get it to him coming, you know, off the side, and he is gone. He had one of the highest catch rates on the team and the yards after catch averages as well. Obviously, he had limited action, but he's a guy that I think you want to get more touches just because, based on his athletic ability. I think you could see him have an expanded role this year. You still have Kentron Poirier, who has had positive reports from camp. We still just haven't seen a whole lot out of him on the field yet. Keyshawn Helton's back. His production really doesn't wow you, but he has been a consistent target. He did get injured, so I'm sure he's back at 100% now, but there is a possibility that, you know, he could still be recovering a little bit from the injury he had a few years ago and just maybe isn't his full self yet. He can make some pretty good catches, as we've seen. I'm not sure how much he might see the field or not this year with the transfers, which is who I'm going to get to next, because I think that's really where the excitement in this room comes in. Obviously, you bring in Micah Pittman from Oregon, who is probably going to be obviously one of your impact guys from day one. I think he's obviously probably going to be a day one starter at the position as well. You saw in spring where he just, I mean, he plays with a chip on his shoulder. He doesn't mind sticking his nose in there. And statistically, when you look back at Oregon, he had 12 receptions, 197 yards, no touchdowns. His catch percentage was only 50%. His drop percentage was 7.7%. His yards after catch was 129. His run block grade was only 54.6. So I'm not going to necessarily tell you that Micah Pittman is the savior of the Florida State offense. But when you watch his film, he's able to work the whole field. He's able to make some plays that we haven't seen from Florida State wide receivers. And what you saw in the spring game, if he needs a couple yards, if he needs 2-3 yards to get the first or the touchdown, he's going to stick his head down and get it, which is why I like Micah Pittman at the, you know, at the receiving position being a starter from day one. I just like the way he plays the game, and I think that, you know, he can make a difference in this offense, and he's a guy that they will rely on a lot this season. Johnny Wilson is probably, to me, one of the most potentially exciting receivers that you have. I mean, when you come in at 6'7", 235 pounds, and from what the staff said, he can do some things with his body and body control that it just isn't natural. And so when you have a guy like that who's still raw, who's still kind of young and undeveloped, but already getting progress reports from camp that he's farther along than they ever expected him to be, that's promising, because even if you can get, you know, a touchdown a game in the red zone, or a couple of receptions a game, or just have the threat of having that big target on the outside, I think that counts for something. And that's why I think he will be able to make an impact this year. I don't know that it's going to be a huge impact just because he is still so young and still being developed. But the positive thing is you also get him for multiple years. And another reason I think you're going to see a lot of him on the field is because his run blocking. He would be the highest graded run blocker on the team. And with that size, you can imagine, I mean, he'll probably just fold a DB up under the bench. And so I think in a run-heavy offense, you're going to see him on the field a lot just for his blocking ability alone. And then you also add in the red zone threat. And if he can put it together and develop faster than they originally thought, which seems to be the case, I mean, he could be a breakout candidate. Again, I want to pump the brakes on potential and not just go handing out Heisman trophies off of practice reports. So it still has to be seen. He still really didn't produce anything at Arizona State. I don't know the situation, you know, at Arizona State other than some of the NCAA violations they're getting, and that program just seems to be a train wreck waiting to happen. But I'm not sure if that's why his numbers weren't that great there. I'm not sure. You know, I mean, obviously he was catching the ball from Jaden Daniels. If that tells you anything, that, you know, you didn't really get much out of this receiver. So maybe that's a little sign there for the LSU game too. And then I think you look at Deuce Spann is another guy who can be that potential impact receiver. He was just he was playing the quarterback position 2 years ago. So I don't know how much you can expect him to develop that fast. But from what a lot of people have said who have watched practice, and I really wish I lived closer to Tallahassee so I could go watch practice and see this from my own eyes, they say that he has an athletic ability with his size and speed that is not really something that they have right now. And so he is a guy that has developed, another guy that has developed faster than they may have thought. And he is probably going to contribute more than expected now. And that's a good thing, because if he has that skill set, I'm not sure how much production he might have. But just again, this is something Florida State lacked last year. If you have a guy who has the ability to take the top off of a defense, and they have to respect that, and then they have to back off or you know, come out in a more pass coverage defense, and then you allow Jordan Travis to eat you up, that alone is worth having some guys on the field like a Deuce Spann, like a Johnny Wilson, having those kind of threats just to make them respect you in the pass game. And that's why I think that the passing game will be better this year. Obviously, if you can give Jordan Travis more time to pass, we already covered why I think he's an efficient, good enough college quarterback to get you results. And if any of these guys' potential can turn into production at the level we think they can, it's obviously going to be a step forward for this offense. You know, we're going to have to wait and see. My whole mantra for the season is cautiously optimistic, because we are going on a lot of potential rather than proven receipts of production at the Power 5 level. So I feel good about a lot of these guys. I feel good about this group, but I'm still cautiously optimistic because, you know, a lot of the reports have also said they're better, but they're not special. So I would still curb your expectations. I still don't expect this offense to throw for 4,000 yards. Maybe 3,000 yards would be nice. And so that's probably the area you're looking at. And so don't hang your hat quite yet on this receiver group just being dominant. But I think it is fair to be excited about how they could look. And just knowing that now you have more big bodies, you have more athletes, you have returning production, you have some reasons to be excited, whereas you really didn't before. And even then, we haven't even touched on Winston Wright, who I originally I felt that he could be one of the biggest X factors of the season, because when you look at his production at West Virginia, he would come in as your most productive receiver. He comes in from last year with over 600 yards, 5 touchdowns, the best PFF grade of the receivers, a good 73.3 catch percentage. He has a low drop percentage, a lot of yards after catch. And so, I mean, he's a receiver that could have really, you know, made a huge impact for Florida State. And again, production-wise, he is one of the ones that had the receipts for production, which all the potential and positive reports are great, but when you have a guy who's produced it on the field, that makes a huge impact. That's something that you can rely on. Unfortunately, we all know what happened with his accident and that he's been out. And I feel like him not really, you know, it still looks like he's back out of practice, but it still looks like he's kind of standing on the sideline with the brace on. You know, Norvell kind of gave coach speak about his progress. And I'm kind of worried that he's not going to make it back for enough of the season to make a huge impact. I'd seriously doubt he's going to be anywhere near LSU. I mean, you got the bye week after that, maybe Louisville, but I don't know that I see it. But again, there's another potential piece that if you can get Winston Wright back, he can make an impact on special teams. He would automatically come in as your best kick returner and your most productive wide receiver. So the potential is there, you know, to, like I said, to be excited about what this group can do if they can put all the pieces together, which brings me to the next segment, offensive line, who is in the same boat. Obviously, under Atkins, the offensive line has gotten better. If you've read an article, The Atkins Effect, you've seen how on-field play, recruiting, and all that has trended in the right direction under Atkins. And I think that really this year is going to be, I'm going to say, the biggest jump yet, because I think the biggest jump is still coming, because a lot of his better prospects and his better graded players that he signed hasn't even seen the field yet, and they probably won't see it this year either. So you look 2-3 years down the road, obviously I think Florida State has the potential to have a good offensive line, and we haven't been able to say that in a long time. I think right now you're going to see a bigger jump from 21 to 22 than you saw from 20 to 21. So you return most of your experience from last year, most of your production, which is great. I mean, you look at Dylan Gibbons, he's a leader. He played in 11 games last year, over 700 snaps, His PFF grade was 65.1. His pass blocking was 83.3. He didn't allow any sacks, according to the PFF stats that I used. And then you also look at between Robert Scott, Darius Washington, and Maurice Smith, that group alone has over 2,700 snaps of experience. And that's not something Florida State has had in a while, is to have that much experience returning and then adding a lot more guys to the mix. Obviously, Robert Scott last year, when you look at some of his stats, he had over 700 snaps of experience. All of his PFF grades were just a mid-60s, so he has a lot of room to improve. He allowed 7 sacks last year. But again, I mean, he wasn't that experienced last year, and so now he carries that forward. He has another year of experience, obviously he has another year of experience, but he also has another year with Coach Storms to get bigger and stronger. And so I think, again, you're going to see a step up from him as well. Darius Washington, I know he's missed some time with some injury. They've been bringing him back. It looks like they're starting to work him back into the lineup now. Again, you have another guy who's experienced at multiple positions, which is another positive, because one of the biggest things that has hurt this offensive line in the past is injuries. And so when you have guys who can be kind of Swiss Army knife players, where they can play guard, they can play tackle, that helps you find the best starting five. And so Darius Washington will obviously be a key contributor this year. And then Maurice Smith, there was unfortunately the loss of Caden Lyles for the season due to injury. In my opinion, I don't know that he was going to start anyway because he was limited in spring. He hasn't been here as long as Maurice Smith. I mean, he looked the part. He looked like a Power 5 lineman. He come from a school that's known for their offensive line. I personally was excited about him. I still think he would have either maybe been guard or second behind Maurice Smith at center. But they already said Maurice is back and up 30 pounds from last year. And we just saw last year he was undersized and he got pushed around late in the season, played through some injury. So if he's back, he's healthy, and he's bigger and stronger and up 30 pounds, I'm sure he'll lose some of that in camp. I mean, I don't see why he can't take another step forward and for this offense. Again, losing Lyles is going to hurt some depth at the position, because I'm not sure who you're going to have snap behind him now. I think they said Brian Estes has been working back there some, a few other guys. But I think Maurice Smith will be more than capable, and I just really think you're going to hope he stays healthy, because obviously the Lyles may not have been losing a starter, but it was a loss for depth at a minimum. And then you still have other guys that are good players, have some what for to them, can definitely be contributors that we just haven't seen a whole lot of yet, whether it be for injury, or whatnot. And that's guys like Thomas Schrader, who they still really like. He's still a good offensive lineman. Zane Herring, Lloyd Willis. These guys may not be have a lot of experience or really impact guys, but I think that it's a talent floor that's higher than it has been recently. And you also have some pieces that elevate that level. So I think overall you have a good, pretty experienced group before you even add the transfers. And by good, I mean better than they were, because no matter how the transfers that you added, good for this offensive line is going to be kind of middle tier ACC. I mean, I don't expect them to be the best O-line in the conference. I think you kind of have to understand what you're going to get from this offensive line and what you can expect. Really, if you can get to average to above average, I think you can work with that. I think that's something that you could still get success with, that type of play. You just can't have bad offensive line play that we've seen for so long, which is why I think when you look at the transfers added, I think you're going to get that level of play, especially, so the first transfer we'll look at, with knowing Caden Lyles is out, you bring in Dimitri Emmanuel from Charlotte, who I'm feeling like I'm a little too excited for him. I'm on the Dimitri train right now, just from seeing camp pictures and stuff. I mean, a guy, he looks the part. He is a big dude. Will his play translate at the Power 5 level? That's the thing, is it remains to be seen, but he was really a solid contributor at Charlotte. I think he had like 36 consecutive starts or something. It was a lot. He played for Atkins in 2019, which was also his best graded season. So Atkins knew what he was getting when he got Dimitri Emmanuel. And if he didn't think he could contribute or possibly even start, I don't think he would have went out and got him. And they played Duke. It's Duke. I'm not really going to use that as a comparison. But I did find where in 2019, his very first season playing, which was under Atkins, Charlotte did play Clemson that season. There were 19 passing situations, and Dimitri, per PFF, he did not allow any sacks, pressures, or hurries. Now, I know that's a really small sample size, but, I mean, as a freshman against Clemson in 2019, the year after they won a national championship, to hold your own, I mean, I think that's pretty good. And it just gives you a little bit of hope that maybe he can be a potential starter for this group. And I think he definitely has the ability to. If not, you at least get a solid depth piece. You get that sixth, seventh, maybe even eighth guy that you feel comfortable with putting in, and it's not just a jailbreak or someone who's lost out there. You have Bless Harris, who comes in from Lamar. He has over 300 snaps of experience, but they did have a shortened season with Lamar. Obviously, there's going to be a big step up in competition coming to the Power 5 level, but once again, according to PFF, he did grade out well and did not allow a sack in those 300 snaps. They are saying that they like his body type. They like the way he has competed so far. And he looks like he's going to be in contention, at least, to be a starting tackle, which Florida State doesn't have a whole lot of true tackles. So I think he may be in contention for one of the spots. We'll have to see. Offensive line is still one where it's kind of like you need to see a few things shake out, and I'm ready to see who they're going to put, because you also have a guy like Jastin Turnentine, who came in from South Carolina. When you got a guy who's 6'6", 337 pounds, with over 600 snaps of experience in the SEC, you would assume that guy's probably going to come in and start right away. But you look at some of his grades, and it's been very inconsistent. Some have been good, some have been very bad. Maybe a fresh start under Atkins at a new program can get him focused and, you know, get him in good shape with Storms, and he can be an impact. He might be more of a depth guy. So there's still some questions to be answered. But overall, I think the room is going to be better as a whole. The group will be better than they were last year. You have more depth. You have more experience. And you also have an offensive coordinator now who is your position coach. So he knows what that line's strengths are. If he thinks that they can't block something, he's not going to suggest they run it to Mike Norvell. If he thinks they can block this player or that player, run this scheme better, that's what they're going to build around. And so I think he's going to be able to get the most out of the offensive line in the offensive game plan, which should help. But I do think that Florida State offensive line now has at least 6 to 7, 7 to 8 guys that you like. Of course, Lyle's going down hurt, but you still have – this is where depth comes in. You know, you lose a guy, and last year you would have been like, oh, no, we're doomed. But I think now you're like, okay, well, it's going to be thinner, but we can still plug someone in and be okay. And then even if you have to get farther down, I mean, they've already worked Kanaya Charlton with the ones a little bit. I think he still had a fair amount of development to go, but I mean, that guy's huge. So, you know, you're going to work in some of the younger guys. Julian Armella, I'm so excited to see this guy in the next few years. I mean, he looks like, as everyone likes to say, he's got that dog in him. He is not scared to go at anyone. He holds his own. He's been pancaking some people from what they're saying. And I think you look at 2-3 years down the road, you got Julian Armella and Lucas Simmons as your tackles. I mean, I'm feeling pretty good about that. So Atkins is putting in work. They're getting a lot better. So, I think that's, it's a positive sign, and I think it will pay dividends this year, just having the extra depth, having the extra experience returning, being able to let a guy sit on the bench if he's injured and not have to play through injury, like we saw a lot last year where you had guys who performed well were just a shell of themselves because, you know, they were trying to play injured. And when you're 6'3" or better and 300 pounds, that's a lot of stress on the body. So having to play injured and everything with that size and that type of frame, and that's just hard on a guy. And so I really look forward to seeing how this group performs this year. I think it could potentially be a good year for them. You have a really tough front in Clemson. You got NC State, who's got a really good defense. And so they will be tested. LSU's got a pretty nasty front seven. They're going to be tested early. again, I like that you can get in a game of experience with Duquesne to kind of get in rhythm, get the calls, and let everybody, you know, get on the same page, which is another thing that this offensive line has had a hard time getting continuity, which is huge in the offensive line. And I think it's going to pay dividends for them to have a lot of guys who've been in the system for a little bit now. And so really, now that we've kind of looked at every position group, I think when you step back and you look, I think quarterback is going to be better this year. I think receiver is obviously going to be better this year, or at least has the potential to be a lot better this year. I think running back will kind of be either at the same level or potentially better. I mean, Jayshon might not have been a game-breaking type back, but he did have over 800 yards, and he was a consistent producer. So the potential to be better is there. You know, the offensive line, I think, is obviously going to be better. And tight end, kind of status quo. It's still not amazing. But if they can get this offense to get back to where Norvell's career averages are, to where they can be like a top 30 offense, then you can look at FSU having a successful season. I think when you add in the transfers, you add in the depth, and you add in the experience, and they do have to face a couple of tough defenses, but it's not, you know, it's not overwhelmingly tough. They're going to have a chance to be successful. They're going to be tested. You know, they are going to be tested between LSU, Clemson, and NC State, at least, who are all pretty good on defense, have a lot of guys, and who are impact players, especially Clemson. I don't think they're going to have a shot at blocking Clemson. I don't think they're going to have a lot of success versus them, just because people are saying this is like, they expect this to be the best defensive front Clemson's ever had, which is going to be ridiculous if it's the case. But again, when you look at the progression that this offense made from 2020 to 2021, and then you add in all the things we just talked about, I think the step into 2022 can be significant. Now, will we see it on the field? I don't know. I still am cautiously optimistic, like I said before, because there's just been so many letdowns, and there's going to be a time where they have an off game. There's probably going to be a time where Jordan is out for a little bit. Someone's not going to equal the potential that we thought they were. And it's just, that's the case. That's football. That's life. And so I can't say that I think this is going to be a top 25 offense and they're going to go out and put 40 points a game. But if you look at adding 100 extra yards a game, like we talked about, if they can just get back to where they were before with Norvell's offenses, I mean, how many games, if you added 100 extra yards and an extra score or so a game, would Florida State, what would their record have been last year? They would have been a 9 or 10 win team. And so I think they're like right on the verge of taking that step. But again, you're relying a lot on potential. You hope this offensive line can stay healthy and be good. You hope that Trey Benson turns out to be the next great running back, it looks like, to come out of Florida State. You hope Jordan can take that next step and he can have a consistent season across 12 or 13 games where he produces, you know, kind of at the same, like we talked about, same percentage level over the course of a whole season. You know, you hope that guys like Micah Pittman and Johnny Wilson and Deuce Spann and Ontario Wilson, you hope they can be productive players for you and it translates onto the field versus just positive reports coming out of practice. And I do think a lot of this is going to happen. But, you know, naturally, Florida State, they got, like we talked about, they got to get better on third down. There's a lot of things that go into this. They have to get better on special teams. When you look at Florida State's starting field position from last season, they were 112th in the country in starting field position, I believe, at the 25.6-yard line. And then another stat that I found, Florida State scored an average of 1.92 points per drive when starting at their own 25-yard line or worse. And the average starting field position last year was the 25.6-yard line. So you had an offense that wasn't very efficient, that was also starting deep in their own territory because of special teams woes most of the time. So I think with having Micah Pittman on special teams, which we'll talk about in the next preview, we'll tack it on the end of defense. When you look at everything in a whole, Norvell's back to calling plays. The offensive coordinator is going to tailor the offense to the strength of the offensive line. You have a good running game that has a high explosive play rate, and you added a bunch of guys who, if not maybe leaders in the conference, they at least elevate the talent level. And so I think when you mix all that in, I think you will have a better offense this year. I think you'll see a lot better performance. I mean, again, like we talked about, Norvell knows how to coach an offense. It's not like he just forgot how to do it. I mean, you know, for goodness sakes, they went to the Cotton Bowl the last year at Memphis. He didn't get there because he doesn't know how to call offense. He got there with a guy with Brady White as his quarterback. I think they just need – they had to get the pieces in order. I don't know that they have them yet, but they got more – they have better pieces to at least work with. So, again, to wrap this up, I think looking at the offense, I think your quarterback's better. Your running back room is potentially better. Your receiving core is better. Your offensive line should take a step forward. You have more depth, more experience. And I think this is an offense that hopefully should be able to put up, at least get to around 30 points a game. And hopefully add, like we said, if they can add that extra 100 yards of offense towards Norvell's career averages, then I just really think that that would bode well, because you already expect the defense to be good. You just worry about the offense. So if they take that step, I think you're looking at Florida State having a better than expected season, especially when you take into some other factors into account, which is another reason why when I do the schedule breakdown, I hope you guys tune into that episode, because it changed some of my outlook on the season. Florida State is not the only one with holes to fill. Florida State actually returns more production than almost all of their opponents. So there's a lot of things that kind of changed my outlook on the season. They play some tough defenses. It's not going to be easy for this offense. I don't think they're going to go into LSU and just kick their teeth in, you know, put up 400 yards and 40 points. But I think this offense, if they play their A game and they play to the potential that we think they have with the pieces they have, I think this offense can be good enough if the defense is as stout as we think they are. So just to kind of wind it all down, I'm excited to see what they can do. I'm excited to see Norvell back to calling plays. Nothing against Kenny Dillingham or anything like that, but you know, you just when it's his offense and now he's back calling plays, he's got his hands in the Kool-Aid, so to speak. I think it'll go good for the offense now that he's had some time to step back, evaluate everything, make some of the changes, influence the culture, get the buy-in right. Now he can kind of get back into the nitty-gritty of running his offense. So again, looking forward to seeing what they can do this year. Looking forward to Jordan Travis being QB1. I think he's can be a more impactful player than people give him credit for as a passer and a runner. And hopefully we see him win some games this year. Like I said, if the defense shows up and the offense takes the jump that we expect, you know, Florida State could win 8 games, maybe more. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see, and it's going to depend on a lot of factors, but I at least like the trajectory that they're going in. Obviously, everything could fall flat on its face, and we could get nothing out of this offense. It's just, we got to wait and see, guys. We got to wait and see. I like to wait till the lights come on. I don't necessarily think we'll learn a lot from Duquesne, but I think that's a huge confidence booster, rhythm booster to get in rhythm for LSU. I think it's great to have that game. It'll be nice to start 1-0, hopefully, for the first time since 2016, and get some momentum going into LSU, where this offense is going to be tested. LSU has a I would say, really good secondary with all the transfers they brought in. They got a pretty legit front 7. So this offense is going to be tested early. And so we'll see how they perform. Hopefully they get some rhythm with Duquesne and can roll that over into LSU. And then we'll learn a lot about them in week 2. And we'll see how the progression is going to translate. Obviously, they still can get better. They got the bye week in week 3. And so we'll see how it plays out. But I feel good about it. Not great. I'll be honest, not great. I still need to see the passing game develop, but I do feel okay about this offense and the trajectory that they're going in. And, you know, if you can get some success, you can start getting some real playmakers. Obviously, you see the offensive line room has already been flipped. It's already being rebuilt. If you could just get enough offensive success and enough wins to start pulling in some of these guys, you know, you got a 5-star receiver already announced he's going to be at the LSU game. So if you can start getting those guys in, then I think you'll see a lot higher ceiling for this offense. But as far as for this year, I think it will be better. It will be improved. It just may not be, you know, a top 25 offense by any means, but I think it's serviceable enough, and I think you can win with it. It's just how much, because it's not so much about this offense, because I think the defense is going to be good, but there's a lot of good offenses in the ACC. And I just don't know if this is one that can win a shootout battle against a lot of those other offenses. Florida State's going to have to rely on their defense, and they're going to have to hope that their offense can produce at a similar level to some of these teams like NC State, Miami even, and Wake Forest. So we'll see how it all plays out. But again, I'm excited to see how it goes. I'm excited to see what they can accomplish. Hopefully they don't have to get too deep into the depth chart, or else I think things could go sideways. But the starting 22 has the potential, and so we'll see how it all plays out. With that being said, make sure you stay on the lookout. The defensive preview should be coming up, and then we'll get into a full schedule breakdown and win-loss prediction, which I definitely think you guys will want to not miss that. And, I appreciate everybody listening. And so, yeah, we'll wrap it up there. Make sure you go check out our website for all the latest content that we put out. And also go make sure you grab that season preview guide. Again, over 40 pages, absolutely free on our website. Thank you guys for listening. Go Noles.